This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. They say nothing good happens after midnight. Democrats in the North Carolina legislature might agree. A hasty vote at 3 a.m. last week put $1 million into the state's fight against the opioid crisis, but the money was drawn exclusively from education, nutrition, and cultural projects in Democratic districts. And this week, legislation to raise the age of juvenile offenders passed in the House, and breweries in Asheville filed suit against the state. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court decided not to rule on North Carolina's voter ID law, so the lower court ruling remains in place. The North Carolina legislature did discriminate against African Americans. Here to talk about that and much, much more is WUNC Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff DeBerry. Hello, Jeff.
Quiet week, huh?
No, it's always a busy week there in Raleigh, and I want you to take us back, though, to a previous week, last week's early morning budget vote. Tell us what that was about.
So the budget has to get two votes in each chamber, and they have to take place on different days. So the Senate Democrats made their case on Thursday evening. And what they tried to do is they tried to slow down the process, and they tried to essentially ask each other questions and you know, ask each other why this budget, the Senate proposal, wasn't as good as the proposal that came from Democratic Governor Roy Cooper. And this was their strategy. It was a new strategy. We haven't seen this before. And, you know, after a couple of hours of debate, it was voted through. That was the second vote. And then there was going to be a third vote just after midnight because, again, votes have to take place on different days for the budget. That's part of that's just statutory language. And we did not expect there to be much drama, if any. But the senators decided, not entirely sure why, but they decided they were going to introduce a series of amendments after midnight, early last Friday morning. They did not tell the Republican leadership about this, so they started running amendments. And of course, when you only have 16 members of a 50-member body, you really can't get those amendments through. So after, I believe it was the Sixth Amendment, Senator Phil Berger, who leads the Senate, asked Dan Blue, who's the minority leader, to come up to the dais and essentially say, you know, how long is this going to go on for? What are you all trying to do? This effectively was a maneuver. This was a political stunt. It was designed to slow down the process. Maybe they were trying to tick off Senate Republicans. I don't know with certainty. But it did tick off Senate Republicans. So they moved to take a recess until 2:30 in the morning. And when they came back, they had changed part of the budget proposal that they had been working on in recent days. And some of the changes, the most notable change, was that they added some money for opiate issues and fighting the opiate epidemic. But of course, if you add money somewhere in a budget, you have to take it away from somewhere else. And they stripped money from eight, I believe, rural counties in the eastern part of the state. And this was STEM education funding. And that didn't go over well.
Because it came from Democratic districts.
Yeah, that's correct.
So the idea is to punish Democrats, but of course you're punishing the people who live in those districts, and that is something not lost on the governor and the Democrats who say, punish us, but why are you punishing the people who go to school in our districts, right?
Yes, and this is – it's not to give it a pass or weigh in on it one way or the other. This is politics. These are bravado attitudes and puffing of the chest. And let us remember that the Senate likes to include policy in its budget. They want to include rules and state laws, and that's been their MO in recent years. And what we saw in that 360, 70-some-odd page budget is not what – not all of it will become statute, will not be part of the final budget. So it remains to be seen whether or not this is just a show of just a show of force and power, or whether or not this will remain intact a few months.
A little Trumpian retribution on the part of the GOP. Mm-hmm. Let's see how that is passing its way from Washington now to Raleigh. Let's go to some other issues now. The state Senate considers in its budget a provision that might cut food assistance for tens of thousands of children. Tell us about that.
Yeah, about 50,000 children and 133,000 people in total would be affected, again, if this provision survives the final budget negotiation. And what this boils down to, this is SNAP, used in short, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And this is something that does provide food to low-income folks. Now, during the recession, the standard for who apply or who is eligible to receive SNAP – North Carolina expanded it. Now, under federal regulations, it's 133% of the poverty level, and North Carolina expanded it to 200% of the poverty level back 8 years ago now. And this move was offered up by a Republican senator, Ralph Heiss. It was deep in this long and expansive budget. And you know, one of his rationales is that it was expanded years ago, and it doesn't need to be the same standard that it has been. He thinks North Carolina has a more generous set of criteria than other states, and at least as of now, this proposal would roll back who is eligible for these this program, which we should note is a federal program, and it would not save the state any money.
Am I right about the rough figures? Tens of thousands of children would be affected by this nutrition, cutback in nutrition for them, right?
That's correct. 133,000 people total, and the estimate is 55,000 of those individuals under the age of 18.
Meanwhile, so, state taxpayer dollars are hard at work throwing Christmas parties. Tell us about that emerging story.
Yeah, there was an audit that came out yesterday from Beth Wood, the state auditor, that looked at the state's largest managed care for mental health. And the most glaring notes from this, the juiciest elements, were that the CEO received $1.2 million in salary and that there have been tens of thousands of dollars spent on parties, Christmas parties, specifically holiday parties. And this is something that is not against the law, but certainly we're talking about taxpayer money here. We're talking about an area that is aimed at providing care for folks who have mental illness and developmental disabilities, and advocates for those areas have said North Carolina falls woefully behind the national standard and what needs to be done to take care of these people. So large sums of money, even if it's a relatively small figure of the budget, but aggregate a lot of money going toward parties and a CEO salary has drawn the criticism of some, and I think that we'll hear much more about this from the Senate. They don't like to see dollars misused or not well spent. So we will hear more about this moving forward for certain.
Old business. The U.S. Supreme Court decided not to hear the state's appeal of voter ID. What's the fallout now?
The fallout now is that we're going to hear more about voter ID and more about voting laws in the coming months, whether that is specifically a new law that seeks to again mandate that voters must show photo identification at the polls, or other provisions that Republicans have looked at and tried to alter the rules of, things like early voting, same day registration, out of precinct balloting. The voting ID bill that passed almost 4 years ago now wasn't just ID. It included some other bigger provisions. So in chatting with lawmakers this week and attorneys, my expectation is that we will see something else, another piece of policy moving forward, probably not as comprehensive as what we saw years ago. Will it receive a legal challenge? I that's probably a safe bet. We'll wait to see what the language is. But this is certainly a contentious issue as it moves forward. And obviously, the ID issue at the polls is something that a number of states, a number of appellate courts have weighed in on. And it's only a matter of time till the U.S. Supreme Court, I think, eventually weighs in on this.
The election law is only one of many pieces of legislation that have found the state of North Carolina in the courts. And you've taken a look at the legislature's record when it comes to lawsuits. How's it doing?
I'm trying to make some sense of it. It's not a simple exercise. To answer that question, the Republicans here have a losing record in court since taking over in 2011. The Republicans took over for the first time in a century. And there are hundreds of challenges that take place each year where people sue the state. Now, many of these are individuals that are challenging a law as it pertains to them. And what I am trying to do is look at lawsuits that have been brought by interest groups, by advocates, that are more broad challenges. And it needs a couple of caveats. But generally speaking, if we're thinking about a score here, Republicans have had three of their laws upheld, some substantial, significant victories for them. And they've had 14 of their laws struck down. But however, thinking about it in terms of like a 3-14 record, I don't feel great about that, because there's a lot of litigation that is still pending. That's one important thing to remember. We have some redistricting cases that are before the U.S. Supreme Court. We could hear about those as early as Monday, or it could be a few more weeks or months. And the other thing that's important to remember as we think about litigation and some of the legal challenges that the legislature has faced in recent years, we think about the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is one of these 13 appellate courts in the United States. It's located in Richmond, Virginia. Virginia. And the Fourth Circuit has struck down four laws that North Carolina has passed, has issued some scathing judgments against lawmakers' actions. And we should note that the Fourth Circuit has had, I would contend, almost an elevated level of prominence or power in recent years because we've had an eight-justice Supreme Court. And if there are ties at that level, at the high court in Washington, it kicks back in the lower court's ruling. It reverts to that. So it holds a little bit more water. And that could change, of course, now with Justice Neil Gorsuch being on the high court, and there now being nine justices in Washington, and perhaps more appetite for challenges to North Carolina enactments and policies moving forward.
Jeff, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
WUNC Capital Bureau Chief Jeff DeBeery. You can find a link to all of his reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we'll talk with the R&B trio King about making independent music and working with Prince. And you'll hear about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.